fraud. The most important thing is to deal with the person working with them. If, in order to work with what you're experiencing a problem with at the present moment, if you need more and more insight on where it came from, the psyche will provide that in dreams. And if you don't need it, the psyche won't. The psyche is oriented in such a way that it will give you what you need if you're looking for it. But if you don't need it, then just work with what you got. Very important. To try to dig up the past, this gets you again on that endless treadmill of self-analysis, and you're not doing anything with regard to what you're working with right now. You're worried about, you know, what happened when you were learning toilet training. That sort of thing. That's not coming to grips with what you're working with.
So, many of these complexes, then, many of these disordered complexes, are caused by our earliest experiences. But that does not mean that we attribute guilt. Again, I'm repeating myself here, to those who were responsible. The family itself can be held in bondage. Now, with regard to those disordered complexes that are caused by early experiences, I can further the disorder by adopting the wrong attitude towards the complex that I might be dealing with. Let's say that in a given person's life there are certain situations which touch off overpowering emotions that are of such a kind that they don't aid one's appreciation of beauty and meaning and truth and the good, but interfere with that. We generally think that we have only two alternatives to adopt with regard to such overpowering emotions or areas of our lives that cause this kind of confusion. We usually think we can only do one of two things in their regard. Repress them, keep the lid on, don't go near the situations that touch them off, stay away. Perhaps even get to the point where you just don't even want to admit that you've got the difficulty. Or give up and just act them out. With repression, the danger is that you repress the emotional energy tied up in the complex. Keep the lid on that energy. Eventually that energy is going to explode. If it's powerful energy, if you're dealing with the energy that's wrapped up in an overpowering complex of emotions, the more you try to keep the lid on it, the more you are increasing the danger of explosion. The explosion can happen in big ways or in little ways. It can happen, you know, like an almost daily outburst of unpleasant emotion that make people more and more wary of getting close to you. That's one way in which the explosion can take place. It's a daily sort of little explosion, you know. But it can also be like Mount St. Helens, a volcanic explosion and a breakdown. Neural breakdown. Better the first than the second, but better neither can be avoided, obviously. The second response often results from the futility of repression. You just say, oh, the hell with it, I can't do it anymore. So you just give in. The energies that are carrying you in certain ways. And you just act it out.
renounce moral responsibility for those energies. Give up the project of trying to integrate them through some kind of direction or control. Usually I think our spontaneous attitude is these are the only two choices we've got. I've either got to keep the lid on or just forget about it and just act it out. I think today there's present in the pop culture, pop psychological culture, the illusion that somehow if I just act them out, I'm going to get integrated. Feels good, do it. And somehow that's going to lead to their integration. That's a destructive, almost demonically destructive illusion. And it's present in veiled or obvious ways in a lot of psychologies. And I think that Jung's psychology at times tends in that direction, at least some of the people that have been influenced by him. Acting them out just increases their power. It just further establishes them in the rut that they're already in. Acting out a disorder just further establishes you in the disorder. It makes it harder and harder to move to a new position beyond the disorder. It fixes your energies more rigidly in the patterns that are disturbing you. Continue simply to act them out. It fixes the energies more rigidly. And so it is a self-destructive illusion to believe that acting them out will lead to their integration. Acting them out will lead to the further disintegration of the psyche. No matter what those overpowering emotions may be, what kind of overpowering emotions they may be. Okay, what we're talking about here, is it a matter of repetition?
I just wanted to give an illustration of what you mean by acting.
Yes, I would mean, for instance, that the kind of thing that is present in the Playboy philosophy with regard to sexuality, for instance, where moral responsibility for those energies and those drives and so on is simply renounced. And there is present in the philosophy that you read, I mean, Hefner is an amateur philosopher, is present in the philosophy that he writes, the notion that you will have a more integrated appreciation of those energies if you give up the moral question with regard to the direction that they're going to take. You will not. Just your life becomes ever more and more scattered and disoriented and incapable of smooth performance in a responsible and loving fashion. And that integration never occurs, and you get further and further away from it the more you give in to that sort of behavior. The other thing is there's a book called The Angry Book. And it's basically saying whenever you're angry, just get it all out. Scream it, hit people and everything else. That's just going to make it worse. That's not the answer. It really isn't. It doesn't do it. There's some other way that must be found to come to grips with those things besides either of these two responses. Neither one of them is any good in terms of moving towards healing. They don't work. And the thing with regard to the anger, that doesn't get you beyond the point of the emotional outbursts. It just encourages you to have more and more of it. You see what I'm getting at? Okay. So what we're talking about here are, from a theological point of view, the fruit of original sin in ourselves. The sin of the world affects me by blocking, insofar as my psychic energy is blocked in these kind of compulsive, obsessive, crippling, paralyzing ways. And that's what I'm getting at there under small letter C, under number 3, original sin and concupiscence. The fruit of original sin in ourselves are these blockages. It's what St. Paul is talking about in Romans 7 when he says, it is not I who do it, but sin dwelling in me. And I'd like to say one thing here about discernment at this point. If God is at work healing the fruit of original sin in myself, healing these complexes over which I have no power and I had no power in their genesis and development, his way with us will be very gentle. We think, you know, that when God is dealing with sin in us, it's always in a harsh kind of way. And even the first rule for the discernment of spirits in the spiritual exercises of Ignatius would lead you to think that way. Well, not when what God is dealing with is the fruit of original sin in ourselves. His way is not harsh at that point. His love is reaching to the same depth as the wound itself reached, and even deeper, in order to heal the wound. So his way of dealing with the fruit of original sin in ourselves, over which we had and have no power, is experienced in gentleness and consolation and healing. The disorder that is rooted beyond my control is dealt with by a love that comes to meet me at the same depth as the disorder exists. The disorder may be keeping me from finding God's will or doing God's will in my life and so on and so forth. But if the disorder is rooted beyond my control, he does not deal with it harshly. Now, if it's within my control, his treatment of me may be quite different. But if it is beyond my control, it is pure love with its healing touch. For those of you then that have worked with the Ignatian exercises in the first rule of the first week for the discernment of spirits, when Ignatius is talking about God dealing with a person who is caught in sin, and he deals harshly with that person, he's talking about personal sin, over which I have some power, which I can do something about. He's not talking about the fruit of original sin in himself. God's treatment of the fruit of original sin is not that harsh kind of thing that he's talking about in that first rule of the discernment of spirits. Retreats that people make. I'm talking here within the context of the Ignatian retreat, but the whole first week of the exercises, spiritual exercises, has to do with sin. And frequently people have what strikes them as a very strange experience. Namely, the whole first week is filled with consolation. And God is attributing no guilt or blame or anything else to them. And they're saying, I read the text of Ignatius, and he's talking about I'm supposed to be aware of how miserable I am as a sinner and what a wretched idiot I've been and all that sort of thing. And none of that has been present in my experience. Why? Because in those cases, God isn't dealing with personal sin. He's dealing with the fruit of original sin in yourself. And when the first week of the exercises is that kind of consoling, healing experience, it's because what he's touching is not your own personal sin, but what the sin of the world has done to you. It's reaching as deep into your being as the sin of the world has reached in your development. Okay. Now, there is a third alternative to these two. And it consists, I think, in three steps. A third way of dealing with these disordered complexes. The three steps are the following. Number one, recognize that the complex is a victim and stop hating yourself for feeling the way you feel, for having these drives and overpowering energies and emotions. Recognize that the complex is a victim. It has been victimized by history, by your family, perhaps even by yourself, but it is victim. Cease to hate those emotional energies. Secondly, if you cease to hate them, adopt towards them an attitude of compassion. Compassion toward our own darkness. Particularly that darkness that is beyond our control. And thirdly, let there emerge from that compassion a willingness to cooperate with whatever forces may be available to heal the darkness. A willingness, let there emerge a willingness to cooperate with whatever forces may be available to heal the darkness. And I'm thinking here in terms of, depending on what it may be, friends, psychotherapy, spiritual direction, prayer, retreat, whatever. That it's just that willingness to cooperate with whatever may be available to heal the darkness, bring light into the darkness, and to dissolve those blocked energies so that they're so that all the energy may be channeled in other directions. Now, as we'll see in the next class, that's a nice solution, and yet it doesn't work unless something else happens. Because the willingness, I wanted to do it this week, but we've only got 2 minutes left. The willingness itself depends on self-transcendent affectivity. And the problem is that it's exactly there that I'm blocked. The willingness to cooperate with the forces that are available to help me. Stating the problem very briefly, that willingness to cooperate with the forces that are available demands a certain amount of self-transcendent affectivity. And the whole problem is that in this area, I don't have that affectivity. So something else has to happen, namely the whole healing vector that has to come to meet me before I've had any chance to ask the question whether I want to cooperate with it or not. Comes in, dissolves. So the healing that moves downwards into consciousness. That's the whole dilemma of moral impotence. The solution is clear, but I can't do anything about it because that whole willingness to do something about it is precisely where the problem lies. If my energies are not self-transcendent, I don't have the willingness to cooperate with what is available to help me. Unless something comes to meet me, unless love comes to meet me, without my having anything to do about it. Just as the wound came to me without my having anything to do about it, the love that will heal that wound has to work its way in without my having any say over the healing vector that moves from the bottom downwards. We'll take that up in the next class. I have time for one question on this, and I'd be happy to entertain a couple afterwards. I do have an appointment in a few moments. But are there any questions on clarification? All right, good. Thank you.
Well, if you want to think about it, no, say, wait, just to let you get it ready.
How does art
fit into the creative actually?
Oh, I think art follows us, you know, some of the same kinds of patterns there. Art is an expression of an aesthetic organization. So it doesn't go all the way up to necessarily.
That's what I want to know about, because I would say that rational would be artistic activity, not human activity.
Okay,
and I want to know what that does.
I would say that that's the case, because I think that empirical level. See, it wants beauty, just as the intelligent level wants meaning and so on. And the beauty can only be realized as the whole of human consciousness is fulfilled. And the beauty is the splendor of the fulfillment of the whole thing, the radiance.